Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second VitaDAO community call. I'm very happy to see you all here. My name is Beata, and I'm the member of Awareness and Operations Working Group at VitaDAO. I will quickly present the formula of the call. So everybody in the audience is muted, but we can see you. So you can wave to us. At the end of the call, there will be a Q&A. So please raise your hand in the chat. The chat is open and we will allow you to unmute you to if you, will, you would like to ask any questions. The call is recorded. It will be then published on YouTube, on VitaDAO YouTube channel. And during the whole call, you can ask your questions in the chat. We will gather them all later on and then ask our attendees to answer these questions, and then we will publish them on Discord. So if you are not members of our Discord server, then Tyler will copy and paste the link to the invite to the chat so you can join us. Now the agenda. So first we have Stefano here who will present us the updates on VitaDAO, the general progress, and then we have Morten and Tim who will talk about the updates about the longevity project. Okay, so Stefano, the stage is yours.
Thanks a lot, Beata, and welcome everyone tonight. I'm really honored to be here and being able to present and show you the progress we've made over the last couple of weeks. So I know that tonight is all about Morten and the project, but still I would like to share like the major milestones we've hit with VitaDAO in the last few weeks, and also give you a quick heads up on what's happening in the coming weeks. First, I wanted to make everyone aware that the working groups, the governance working group, as well as the tokenomics working group posted their first proposals on Discourse. So everyone that has not signed up yet on Discourse and started to comment on these proposals, please do so. We will share the links in the Discord, also later in the chat here. And yeah, thanks a lot to everyone involved in these two working groups for getting the first Vita proposals up. I'm really glad that we are there and we can publicly show everyone that's not part of our working groups yet the first results there. So everyone, please go on Discourse, comment, read, and really engage with this because we want to make VitaDAO as inclusive as possible. Then the next part is in the next few days, we will also share a lot of documentation around how is VitaDAO working. Some sort of FAQs are going live on the website, on Discourse, but also closely monitored channels, the channels on Discord, because we're going to share several articles, several documentation around that, how you can get better involved, and how we can all of you onboard better and get more visibility on what's actually happening behind the scenes. Then a more technical thing, I would quickly ask Tyler to share a link now here in the chat. And for everyone that's watching and is a researcher, we will share that on YouTube as well as on Discord. This is going to be a sign-up form for all researchers that are following us on that process. We would love to get you on board. We would love to hear what projects you're working on. So please fill out the form, get in touch with us so we can really engage and get you engaged. And then last but not least, and I think the one thing which is open, which I'm like, very happy to share, and thanks a lot for everyone on the team for making that happening. We have a launch date and we will launch on Friday, the 18th of June, the auction for the token. So I'm happy to announce that date. All launch guides, all step-by-step processes, as well as more information on that will be shared in the coming days over our Discord. So the next link for Tyler to pop down here in the chat or for everyone watching that later on is the link to our Discord. Please join us. Please stay tuned for all the updates that are coming in the coming days there, and bear with us. We're giving our best, and yeah, thanks a lot for giving me the stage, Beata, and thanks a lot for the DAO and for everyone involved for giving me the voice, and happy to give it back to you, Beata.
Thank you very much. So now I would like to welcome Morten and Tim. Could you guys present yourself, introduce yourself?
Hey, my name is Morten Skjærvik Knudsen. I'm an associate professor at the University of Copenhagen, and I've been involved in the development of this project actually for several years. So it's really exciting that we're finally here, and I'm really happy to be here.
And hi, I'm Tim Peterson. I'm an assistant professor at Washington University in St. Louis School of Medicine. And I'm just going to be asking Morten some questions to give some background on his project, which is the first project to launch with the Vita DAO. So I guess, Morten, just for everyone who is new to Vita DAO or new to your research, can you just maybe walk through a little bit of how you kind of stumbled upon this project?
Yeah, so the particular project that we are looking into comes from, actually is born out of this idea of repurposing drugs. So the sort of basis of the idea comes from the metformin trial. So this is a trial where Neobasilai is testing a drug called metformin, which is a diabetic drug, to investigate how this affects aging. And so we were very fortunate here in Denmark to have a really quite significant amount of data on prescription drugs covering the entire Danish population, so 5 million people, allowing us to look at potential drugs that affect aging. And so this was really the idea, and we got the opportunity to do so. And I was lucky to be able to recruit some fantastic data scientists to look at the data and some amazing molecular biologists to investigate the sort of the effect of the drugs. And so this has been an interesting opportunity to pursue this.
So the idea is you found drugs that are already being used in the public. That's what this word repurposing means. You found drugs that were already in the public, and the idea is you want to maybe use them for other. You're finding that they were being could be useful for other diseases or other health issues.
Yeah.
So, other than the ones that they're being prescribed for.
Is that what? Yeah. So this is about 3,500 drugs that we have in the database, where we've looked for drugs that have a survival or a longevity benefit compared to other drugs that have been prescribed to the same diagnosis. So this indicates that we're perhaps finding drugs that affect aging. And in addition, of course, because we have extensive registries, we actually have data on the diagnosis of individuals, which allows us to find new indications for these existing drugs. So this is part of the IP, you know, intellectual property that can come out of this project.
Okay. And so the IP, can you say a little more about that though? Because if there are drugs that already exist in the wild, you know, and you've kind of inadvertently found that they are associated with people living longer, even though it's not why they were originally given, can you maybe say, well, somebody owns those drugs, you know, metformin you mentioned, you know, that's off patent. That actually no one owns that one anymore. You say how you then could take a drug, not necessarily metformin, but some of these other drugs you found, and can convert that into IP that Vita DAO can use.
Yeah. So there are two ways, right? There's one way is having the existing drugs, but finding a new use of that drug. So you can identify novel uses of a drug. So that's one way to generate IP, and that is patentable. The other way to generate IP, and we're doing that in other projects, is to take the molecule and then modify it, adding different small changes to the molecule, and then that will give you a new molecule with better properties, and then we can patent that molecule.
Okay.
So that's really the two ways I think that we can generate IP for this project.
And so where are you guys kind of at right now? Maybe you can explain a little bit on the the workflow that you guys have that you've outlined with VitaDAO.
Yeah, so we're starting sort of very basic with the molecules. So we have two main approaches in this first round of the VitaDAO, which is to test the compounds in human cells and in cell models of aging. So we use a couple of different models, which we can characterize as aging models, which is when cells get old, they become senescent. And we have several models of senescence where we can test the drugs in these models. And we've actually developed sort of AI deep learning methods to identify and screen large numbers of drugs and large numbers of concentration of drugs to see if they can impact senescent phenotypes in cells. So that's one thing. The other thing is to test the drugs in vivo in animal models. And here we have chosen fruit flies because fruit flies, they don't live 80 years. So they are a bit more easy to measure lifespan effects on. And so we have also here a deep learning model that can actually track fruit, individual fruit flies over time in their little habitats. And then we can figure out if the drugs can affect aging, lifespan, motor function, and other health parameters in the flies. So these are sort of the two main ways that we are measuring. And of course, going forward, we can also eventually move into mice and other things. We actually have a couple of clinical trials in people also. So, but this is down the line. You know, first steps is cells and fruit flies.
Okay. And so that's a typical kind of workflow, right? In what's called preclinical development, where, you know, you have to kind of test in simpler models where you can get some robust results, and then you build up to working in animals and then even larger animals, and then ultimately to people. You know, it's this kind of the standard workflow. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think the good thing about this is because these are drugs we're digging out of the database, they are already tested in humans, right? So we actually know that they are safe to use in people. So I think this is a big advantage.
Great. So, and then, so maybe you can tell us, I mean, maybe you don't want to give away too much right now, but is there kind of any interesting things on the science that you've already found so far, or, on a particular molecule?
We started testing them, and we are not that far yet, but we have started lifespan experiments with the fruit flies, and we have started testing the drugs in the cell lines. And there is maybe something interesting with one of the compounds, but I think it's a little bit early to say that. But we will keep that. We will, you know, update people with that data for sure. I think this is part of the interesting thing of the VitaDAO, is that we can continuously share our findings with the community. And so far we've shared, you know, interesting videos, but we'll start sharing real data.
Great. And that data is kind of the videos you alluded to. Those are on the VitaDAO YouTube channel. There's other forums, which I think Tyler is posting some links for, and that everyone can go and look to see Morton's Labs project. And so, as you said at the beginning, this is at the University of Copenhagen. Very grateful that your university was able to work with VitaDAO to set up, you know, this arrangement. Hopefully the idea is right that. You know, this kind of arrangement could be set up with other partnering organizations, right? Maybe you can just kind of speak to a little bit of the partnership went, and, you know, just, you, like you said, it took some time, but that the idea is going forward, you know, now that you guys have kind of done all the hard work, hopefully
I think
that you've kind of set the framework right for how this could be when people are listening in on this conversation, they say, oh, at my university or my, you know, organization, that we can kind of follow Morton's lead there, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we tried a lot of different types of setups with the Tech Trends unit and ended up with a particular one that we could discuss at maybe at some other time. But I think the point is that it's doable, you know, yep. I think this is definitely something that other universities can follow. I can't imagine why this would be unique for University of Copenhagen.
Right.
But I think it's a very interesting setup, you know. So I'm really happy that we are where we are right now.
Yeah, and definitely you being one of the leaders in this space, you know, that will give other, you know, more, you know, maybe more junior people kind of the confidence, right, that they can make this happen. If you're, you know, one of the leaders in the space, that this is, you know, really possible for, you know, it's really something that, you know, people that are making an impact can make possible. So thank you for that. So
I definitely hope we can spearhead something, and I really hope that this will grow to something very big. And I have very much faith in the team behind it. And I'm extremely impressed with, you know, the growth that it has had once it hit Discord and everything started sort of exploding. It's really been incredible to look at. So I have a very good feeling.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for taking the plunge. So, all right. So I guess in terms of questions, from the audience, I don't know if Tyler, did you want to start to chime in or Beata start to chime in?
Yeah, so I mean, it would be great if people have questions, if they're able to write them in the chat, and we can begin to choose some from the chat directly. You can also try to post some on Discord. I'm monitoring there as well, and I'll try to pass some of the interesting ones along. Maybe just to double check with Beata. Okay, now I can see. So this is one from Ben Miles. Of the hits that you've identified, Morton, from the population data, do you know which percentage of those are off patent at the moment?
This is a great question. Actually, I'm not completely sure about this. This is something we can definitely answer, but I will have to get back to you on that, unfortunately.
Maybe the question is how many could be easily modified, right? Because even if they are in patent,
you know, yeah.
That's also a hard thing to answer, right? Until you really dive into each of these 3,000 molecules.
But yeah. I mean, most compounds can be modified, I think, you know, so it's all a question of cost. So I'm not sure how much this is a barrier, but with the off patent, we can definitely look into that for sure.
There was another question. So what is the timeline of the research and what steps are upcoming? I know you touched on that sort of briefly, but maybe if you want to discuss the sort of timeline for the first set of experiments specifically.
Yeah, so we are starting up with cell and fruit fly work. And the original timeline that we came up with the visa DAO is that this is will probably take will be a 2-year project, this first round, and this is a wide margin because I think there should be room for selecting the right compounds. So we do have compounds in testing right now, but it's possible that we'll not find something, so we will have to be able to back this up with additional compound testing. So the first round here is 2 years. If we find something, I mean, I would be thrilled with moving forward with additional experiments. This will, of course, be something that will have to be discussed with the Vita DAO, but we do have, as I mentioned, the capacity to do mouse work and even eventually clinical trials. But this, I think the clinical trials, this will take years, but the mouse work we can probably proceed with reasonably fast if we find a hit. So within maybe a year or so.
Morten, there's another question here. If you can speak a little bit more, I know you, I also want to be conscious of time. I think you have 9 minutes and then there's a, yeah, hard cutoff for you, but can you talk a little bit more about the deep learning simulations, and do you perform docking simulations? This comes from Anders.
So the deep learning, this is not simulation, it's a deep learning algorithm that can predict the age of a cell or the age of a fruit fly. And we are using that to predict senescence and predict if the drugs affect senescence or if the drug affects aging in the flies. Docking simulations we are actually doing with collaborators. So we're not doing that ourselves, but this is something that I guess could be done. But this would require that we know the target of the drug. And since we are very likely looking at, or potentially looking at off-target effects, this will first require that you have a target to dock with. So then you can do target identification, and we actually do that using something called DARTS assay, where you have your compound and then you have a mixed proteins, you mix them together, and then you have another protease that eats up proteins that are not bound to the compound, and then you can analyze which protein is left and that can give you a target. So we're using that technology in other projects, and it's something that we can do down the line.
Just to add a little color to that, right? Even metformin, which is one of the, you know, most well-known aging drugs, right? The mechanism, and it's used for diabetes currently. The target is not known, so docking simulations would be helpful. But even if you could dock it to any particular protein, you wouldn't necessarily get total agreement by everyone that protein docking is actually what's most important for the anti-diabetic effect. Yeah. So all these things kind of are, you know, depends on kind of who you
are. That's a great point.
There's a question.
Probably resveratrol also, another aging drug. But yeah, go ahead, Tyler, sorry.
So this sort of speaks to a question that Steve on Discord brought up recently. So he's curious around the parameters that exist for filing a novel use patent on a drug. And he's saying he's assuming that there's some sort of metrics that have to be met for this new use to count as novel enough to file the patent or to be granted. And I'm happy to speak to that a little bit. Maybe Tim, you can as well. But I think what you basically need to show is that the effect in this case would be an off-target effect that is not currently the prescribed use for the therapeutic, and that use that is being explored in this, let's say, novel case hasn't been previously described in literature in a way that would prevent you from being able to actually claim intellectual property on it. So in many cases, what you have in the context of medicinal chemistry, like Morten was talking about previously, was that you would basically try to, you have two options. You could, if this use hasn't been described previously anywhere in the literature, you could pursue this sort of method of use patent. But a more common strategy, and perhaps a stronger strategy often for intellectual property, is to employ a medicinal chemistry strategy where you actually modify the drug to really select and optimize for those off-target effects that you're going after, in essence, creating a new drug. And obviously there's some complexities with this based on the jurisdiction in which you're filing. There's probably some differences in between Europe and the United States. I'm not sure if you want to speak to that at all, Tim, as well.
No, I agree. Yeah, I mean, finding the different bells and whistles that are non-obvious that would make your, you know, unique, your drug, you know, superior over whatever is existing is often regarded as kind of the best approach in a repurposing scenario.
I think that, so as Tyler mentioned, I have a hard deadline at 6. I'm talking at the Aging Science Talks lecture later, and I'll actually talk a little bit about some drug development there. If people want to chime in, then I think it will.
Can you drop a link? Is it, do you have a?
Yeah, I should have it somewhere. Just 1 second. You can go ahead and continue. I'll find it.
Thank you very much, Morten. In the meantime, guys, you can also ask questions not only to Morten but also to our team. So we have Stefano, Tyler, and Paul.
Yeah. So there's quite a few good questions here coming in. I don't know who wants to So Keith Camito has a question. I'll just kind of, I can, while
more. Yes, go ahead.
So Keith Camito has a very good question about, you know, there should be biomarkers collected with this Danish data set, right? If they're getting, you know, essentially all tons of data from people in Denmark. So maybe Morten, are you ready to maybe speak to any biomarkers that you think could be interesting to be looked at?
So the data that we have collected is, you know, extensive data over many, many years. So we already have survival data, which is the ultimate biomarker, right? So we do know that the drugs are associated with longevity. And we can also correlate it with, we have healthcare records associated with the individuals. So there may be some biomarker data that we can extract from that. This is something that we have to look further into, but we do have the, I think, the ultimate biomarker, which is lifespan curves, which is rare in humans, I must say.
And Ben Miles has a question about accessing the data. Is there anybody, have you spoken to anybody about the, you know, your kind of your analysis of the data? Or, I mean, is this, you know, has there been any conversations just about the data itself, not the drugs and, you know, that IP, but the data IP?
I think that, you know, we are exploiting the data uniquely. So if that is what you're asking, or?
Yeah, so there's a Web3 organization called Ocean, which is specifically interested in data and monetizing data and
this data is not accessible.
AI assets, and so
I think this is more specifically relates to data that would result from projects, for example, that wouldn't be used in the context of an IP filing. So one of the mechanisms that we're exploring, albeit it's quite young and these data marketplaces are relatively novel, is that if there is participation in VitaDAO and data emerges that could be particularly valuable for, let's say, AI, machine learning, or let's say integration into another laboratory to better understand or utilize these data sets, or for example, the pharmaceutical industry, this is an option to allow for data monetization. But this doesn't relate to the, let's say, large database that Morten has access to, but rather data that would emerge through the course of this project.
Guys, I don't want to stop Morten because he has this call in 2 minutes. So maybe we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to log on very, very soon.
Morten, thank you so much for taking the time. We're super excited to have you on board with this project. And yeah, thanks for taking the leap of faith and really, really excited to see where this goes. Also, just amazing to have a community of people sort of watching and ready to interact, and yeah, appreciate your lab's willingness to be super open and engaging. It's really, really exciting.
Yeah, thank you very much for this, and also thanks
to Asia,
Michael B and Daniela for spearheading this, and also Jonas, of course, our newest member on this team. Thank you very much, and looking forward to working hard on this. Bye bye.
Okay, guys, if you want to check also updates from Morten's lab, we invite you to our VitaDAO YouTube, where they post videos from the lab. And do you have any other questions to our core team?
Yeah, I would be happy to open this up very generally around VitaDAO, the launch, any questions that you might have that you feel would be valuable to get some clarity on.
And also, if you want to speak, I can unmute you. We have a question from Tracy. After funding this initial project, going forward, do you foresee that the VitaDAO governance will elect to develop a coordinated portfolio of projects that will intentionally bolster those research areas that seem to be lagging?
So I'm not sure if it's necessarily research areas that seem to be lagging, but my personal conviction is that funds should really be dedicated towards areas that are particularly promising, maybe more moonshot oriented, but typically underfunded, either because these things are a risk, it's maybe difficult to get these things into the clinic. These are my own personal convictions, and ultimately at the end of the day, this is a community of individuals who get to decide on you know, what is voted on and what research is funded. It's obviously somewhat difficult at this stage to predict the dynamics of the community and what people will gravitate towards in the end. But from sort of an ethos perspective, I would really like to see funds flow into areas that are somewhat typically underfunded in the context of health span, lifespan experiments.
And people that are underfunded.
Exactly.
People and projects, yep.
A question from Max Schultz: is it possible to participate if one misses the initial token sale? There will also be ways in the future to join the DAO by contributing work or resources. If you miss the initial sale, I think it's also fair to say that the token will probably be listed eventually on other places where you could obtain it in secondary markets and things like that. So I'm sure there will be plenty of ways to get involved after the initial sale.
Okay, next one is from Adam McDonald. Is there anything non-researchers, non-academics, et cetera, in the community could help within VitaDAO?
Definitely. So I mean, again, there's a huge amount of moving parts in the context of this project, whether it be the operations, the day-to-day running of the sort of DAO, the info and awareness that we hope to spread, the recruiting of additional researchers. There's a lot of different ways that I think, even just purely from like an organizational perspective, how to become more efficient, how to, let's say, you know, structure effectively this flat organization. So I think we really want to encourage people that don't have a strong academic background, but are still passionate about longevity or aging, or really just want to get involved and do something meaningful to have a part in the project. I think a lot of that will become easier post-launch. Our team is, you know, I have to admit, we haven't been necessarily the best at getting back to people immediately who've applied to help out. We've had hundreds of applications and also just in our sort of, trying to get the technical, the legal, the governance frameworks all together to make sure that we could launch smoothly with this. But absolutely, it's an open community that's meant to be inclusive. And we would strongly encourage people who are non-researchers and non-academics who are still passionate to get involved.
Thank you. Then we have a question from Miguel. Is there eventual plan to expand funding to startups and going beyond research? Is that level codified, or is that up to the community votes?
Again, this is. Do you want to say something here, Tim? I saw you raising your hand.
Oh yeah, I think. I mean, we're kind of seeing this as there's research projects, but we're also just in assets that already exist. And maybe I don't know if Tyler, is that's where you were going to go with this, but I think we're thinking of funding multiple projects at very different stages. So.
Yeah, I think it ultimately depends on the resources that VitaDAO has. I mean, so my feeling is that with the nature of this community, we could be quite. Maybe risk prone isn't the right word, but really, sort of bet on higher risk things or take, sort of go after moonshot sort of projects that really, if they succeed, have a tremendous impact. And I think that's the thing that excites a lot of people in the space. But, I think we're looking at basically having in the end, like a relatively diversified, let's say, output of funding and sort of targets for funding. So I think we could certainly look at startups or even things like investing into royalty agreements from startups that are late stage to offer non-dilutive funding to them. We can look at also doing donations and funding things that might not have any chance of producing IP. And so these things aren't codified. It comes down to what the community is ultimately interested in doing, and people will be able to make proposals to, let's say, fund something that is less focused on actually generating IP, or maybe, there's a startup that people feel are really valuable and we want to figure out a way to fund something like that. These are all within the realm of possibility, but I think, you know, as a start out, as a starting point, and with, you know, sort of considering how the organization is designed, I believe the initial target should really be on, you know, private institutes, academics, universities that are working on sort of preclinical stage projects and exist within this, let's say, translational valley of death, where it is traditionally quite difficult to get funding. But again, this is up to the community. And
maybe to add something here, we've actually received interest from like very reputable longevity startups out of the Bay Area, some of which have gone like YC Combinator funded. And there, the interest would be to actually tokenize some of their IP. So essentially the lead targets that they're working on, some of which are already patented, and figure out how to attach those to NFTs that VitaDAO could potentially own and fund. So that's definitely in the realm of possibilities. What I currently wouldn't anticipate, but again, this is up to full community kind of discretion and how the strategy evolves over the long run, is to actually, let's say, contribute funds for like equity investments into startups.
I mean, these are kind of all allude to a couple of questions from Ben Miles that he put in the chat, you know, about alternative, you know, revenue streams and not just focusing on this kind of valley of death here, Tyler. So I think we'll definitely have to be mindful of, you know, the timelines of how long these projects are going to take, you know, not everything.
Absolutely.
We can't wait several years for the IP. You know, we are going to be generating a lot of data with this project. So using things like Ocean to, as a marketplace for the data, you know, we're have to keep these things in mind. But as you said, Tyler, you know, none of this is codified, and we're, you know, definitely open to suggestions and everyone's feedback.
Yeah. I think what's exciting about this, I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, if members want to drive a strategy that is more focused on being, you know, a bit more aggressive, a bit more late stage, you know, focusing more on short-term wins as opposed to long-term wins, there's definitely the ability to do that, you know, through proposals. And I think what we'll see emerge is sort of the hive mind of this community, and probably some collective average that exists that guides people towards, you know, the common ground that they share in terms of what they think VitaDAO should be. And yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting and exciting to see how that plays out. Paul, there's another, you know, I'm not sure how much we can speak about this at this stage, because I know some things are still being finalized, but a question around how many tokens will be allocated for the sale in the Gnosis auction, around minimum price, other tokenomic parameters. Can we discuss some of that?
Yeah, so the current plan is to, actually a lot of documents will be released in the coming days, just around that. Yeah, actually propose that like everyone on the call reviews the overall tokenomics when they're released. So the plan is that actually we will have a very, most of the tokens will be locked up for the community to govern in the long run. And then it's kind of a very equal distribution mechanism where 10% is allocated to the long-term working groups. And people that are currently working on making the organization function, then 10% will be allocated to service providers, which are all the current companies and teams, like Morton's Lab, for example, or Molecule, our organization that is helping turn the IP into NFTs that can be held by VitaDAO, or Linum Labs, the entire development team that is currently building the smart contracts. 10% is allocated to those service providers, and most of these, or like all of these actually follow vesting schedules, but also schedules that enable those service providers and initial working group members to engage in the governance process. And then 10% is moved into the public Gnosis auction. And actually the allocations for service providers and working groups are then voted upon by the initial, let's say the initial token holder community. So our goal with this was to create a fully decentralized launch from the start. I'm excited to see here that in the way that we've designed this and kind of formed community consensus is that no tokens have ever been issued to anyone or promised to anyone in that broader sense. VitaDAO has been a full kind of community collective effort. There was never a pre-sale. There was never a single token that was sold to an investment group or an individual investor. And the actual auction price will be determined by the participants. So it's actually the community that gets to decide all of these parameters. We're together with the longevity working group. We are determining kind of a minimum amount that will be required to support a minimum set of projects as a proof of concept. And that will actually be the only determining factor within the auction. So the like Gnosis auctions follow a similar design as Kickstarters, saying that basically if we can't reach this minimum threshold, then FIDADAO is unlikely to succeed. So then we'd have to go back to the drawing board. And that minimum threshold is likely to be set at $2.5 million. So that would be the minimum to kind of support Morten's project in a first funding. And then the amount going to Morten's project is much smaller than that, obviously. So it's a first tranche of just over 250K to support those first set of studies. Then there's a specific amount of projects that FIDADAO could support after that. As I said earlier, we'd love all of your comments and feedback on kind of these initial design mechanics. And there'll be a lot of collateral coming out in the next couple of days and coming weeks where you guys can comment on or get involved in. Yeah, got it? So,
interesting question from Martin here. Do we have pre-committed capital that will be participating in the token sale or people or groups that we feel are very interested? I mean, we've had a huge amount of investor interest and interest from institutions, people looking for pre-sale, et cetera, that we've all turned down in the interest of really ensuring that this is a fair launch and you know, a launch that everyone can really participate in on fair terms. That said, I think we have a lot of people who have expressed interest in participating. So we're feeling quite confident about our ability to do this successfully. This is always something I think in the context of a project that you know is to be considered, the dynamics of what it would mean to have early investors or sort of doing a pre-sale versus doing this in a fair and open way where everyone gets the same terms and can participate at the same time, everyone gets the same price for the token ultimately. And we felt that doing it the sort of fair launch way was more important than ensuring excessive capital or maybe being able to reach the raise amount, because doing it with more pre-sale dynamics and let's say early investment, I think changes the nature of the people that you get sort of participating in the DAO. I think often in many cases you would have organizations that maybe are looking to make a quick profit by buying early and then exiting early. There's at this point there's no pre-committed capital, but there is a lot of soft interest. Cool. And
just looking. I don't see any new questions.
Keith Camito kind of touched on another thing, about projects that could have very impactful near-term results, but no profit motive. And so will FIDADAO be interested in those? We kind of did allude to that earlier. I think we're interested. So Vincent Weiser is kind of leading up an initiative where we won't kind of get into now, but you can follow up with him later about those types of initiatives. So we're, this isn't just a purely profit driven entity, and we're still actively considering how we kind of do this kind of for-profit, non-profit situation. And so you can follow up with Vincent Weiser on that.
Yes, and we have a new question from Tracy. I'm hoping we can use the IPN data that FIDADAO owns to incentivize more sharing and less competition. This could promote efficiency in our overall progress towards rejuvenation. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel quite strongly about this. This is open science is really close to my heart. Collaboration is obviously something that I think the lack of collaboration impedes science tremendously. I think in a perfect world and in like a sort of dream world, healthcare would be seen as a human right. You wouldn't have to worry about access or drug pricing. Things would be made available to everybody. Obviously, we don't live in that world, so you still need to figure out how to create incentives for people to collaborate, incentives for people to be more open. And I think FIDADAO is a step in that direction. I don't think it's necessarily the solution to a problem that's definitely much bigger. You know, that it's really, really systemic. But my hope is that by having these organizations that sort of anyone can join that are open and where you have an incentive structure to really share and be more open, that this basically demonstrates in some ways the power of that can be achieved by working together. We also have, I mean, interestingly, you know, there are contract research organizations, service providers that are basically showing that they're willing to provide preclinical services. They're willing to work in exchange for Vita tokens, which I think is really powerful, because over time, Vita as a token can become this really this incentive for collaboration that binds a large group together towards a common goal. And I think we'll see these sort of incentives that are emerging from the sort of Web3 space be employed in other systems that hopefully foster collaboration as well. But yeah, fully agree with that comment. I would also say, I mean, I don't know how much time do we have? I was going to say we could, it's like slightly weird just not having anyone speak. we could have taken these questions, I think via audio or.
Yeah. I mean, actually, let's just open up the conversation. I mean, like, okay. I'm also really grateful that a lot of you guys are just have your video on. I always think that's super nice to kind of see people and the faces that are part of the community. Keith, I see you just unmuted yourself.
Oh, it just requested, but yeah, I didn't have anything particular to say, but to fill the silence, I'll just say that, I really do believe in projects like this, because as was just mentioned, there's a lot of work in this space that doesn't have traditional profit motives, or maybe could even be profitable through something like this, but just requires that like initial activation energy to get over the hump. And I think projects like this are like perfect for getting these sort of potential therapies to market. So I'm like super enthusiastic. Good work.
There's also a thanks, Keith. And your support is always, Keith is an amazing person and an amazing advocate for longevity. So if you're not familiar with him or lifespan.io or Leaf, I highly suggest to check out his organization. They're doing really, really incredible work. And inspired us a lot actually in our thinking. Nick raised a good question here that I think is important to think about. Playing the devil's advocate, what's plan B if funding preclinical studies in longevity doesn't work out? We then pivot and focus on other research that repurposes FDA, EMA approved compounds for other indications for IP generation. You know, I, at the end of the day, the way that I think about VitaDAO is really as an experiment. It's absolutely not certain that, you know, the DAO is going to go on to fund a blockbuster drug, and you know, science is full of failures and challenges, and is not, you know, the path isn't riddled with only successes. So, you know, I think what's interesting is with a lot of bright people in an organization, if you bring together a community of really intelligent people that are problem solvers and have a lot of wherewithal and work together, you know, I think that's really the power of the organization and the ability to pivot or make do with the resources it has or repurpose itself in terms of what its goals are. Or one of the things that I think is actually quite unique to DAOs and really exciting, you have this ability for someone to make a proposal. Hey, this isn't working. This is my idea. What do you think? Get a bunch of feedback and then begin executing in an agile way and in that direction. So I think it'll be really exciting to see how this plays out over the next, you know, 1 to 5 years, what works, what doesn't, and really integrate those learnings into the sort of DNA of the organization. But I think it's also an exciting thing to, you know, for me, as much as this is an experiment in a new approach to biotech or biopharma or funding, it's also really an experiment in what happens when you bring together a community of a couple thousand people around a common goal, right? And a lot of really, really bright people who I think if this was a startup company or something else, these people wouldn't be here. There are people who have joined the Discord community where I'm completely in shock that these people are interested in what we're doing and can also become, in essence, owners in this project, right? They can have as much impact as the people who have been here since day one. And so that attracts a certain type of talent that you can't really attract with a startup. And I think it also attracts a certain desire for innovation that's really exciting. So we'll see how it goes.
Thank you, Tyler. We have Max who wants to ask a question. Also, he raised his hand.
Hey guys, I've got a quick question with regards to one is probably like the token sale, but like more like the stability of a DAO. Because I mean, you were like mentioned there, like people wanted to pre-commit money, but you just declined them. But technically on a token sale, people could whatever throw $5 million in it, which would to some extent be nice, but when it comes all from one person, this person might have like a large amount of tokens and or multiple people put in large amounts in, right? So that you still have like some kind of decentralized thing, which effectively becomes like kind of an oligarchy though. So what kind of mechanisms do you foresee for that? That yeah, like a hostile takeover doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's a great thing to think about. And so what we, the reason why we chose a public auction mechanism was to enable full transparency and give everyone the same rights and actually put the full power of the DAO into the hands of the community. So if you think about the way that we've structured VitaDAO, it's impossible to promise anyone anything. And so that was also a reason why it's impossible for anyone in the community at the moment to promise anything to, let's say, to people who want to pre-commit capital. And I very much believe, so if we look at systems like Ethereum and the way that they launched without, let's say, pre-committed capital. And these forms of fair launches have actually statistically proven to be much more inclusive and have formed much stronger communities over time. As opposed to projects that were pre-funded and then took years and years to launch and often launched at a very inflated value to then only then let the public and the real community members participate, often to kind of find them holding some of the value that was extracted by those early investors. Or actually be missing that value. So anyone that kind of has engaged the VitaDAO community in a broader sense hasn't been turned down. We've just said, look, these are the terms, and the terms are the same for everyone. And we couldn't, even if we wanted to, the community will essentially vote on what anyone would get. Now, because it's a full fair launch auction, there is a risk of an individual entity over committing capital. And then this potential oligarchy that you say forming, that you mentioned, I think that's a risk with any project. And it's kind of walking the line between saying we're promoting full fairness and transparency and decentralization, or we're managing that decentralization and then introducing centralization. So there's always kind of a line there. A couple of the people that want to contribute large amounts of capital have introduced themselves, and we hope will become strong members of the community and actually promote the community's values in the fullest sense. But I think one of the beauties of working in a fully decentralized way that cannot be controlled by a single entity or a single group of stakeholders. But it's also kind of the risk, because you place, from inception, VitaDAO will be placed into the full hands of the community.
A couple other points though to that. I mean, one, only roughly 10% of the initial token supply is being sold. Two, I believe it does become prohibitively expensive in some cases. Well, maybe a better point. I'm not sure what value there would be in someone trying to basically sabotage the mission of the DAO. I mean, just if I was participating in this, presumably you want this to be a successful organization, or you're obviously aligned with the DAO succeeding in some way, acting in a way that, let's say, dramatically prevented other people from having any say in governance probably is not going to serve the project long term. So I don't think there's really an incentive for someone to do that. And then beyond that, I think the key thing that's important to us and something that we're ensuring through the incentive scheme that we're trying to create now is that, independent of whoever contributes to the sort of Genesis launch event, a big part of the work we want to do is basically incentivizing researchers and experts in longevity to join this without actually needing to participate in the sale. If they're willing to contribute their time, their work, et cetera, to become part of the structure. And I think so, you know, if the structure itself is primarily owned by, or, you know, in a large part owned by researchers, postdocs, master students, professors, even people who are advocates or enthusiasts, it has a high likelihood of being successful long-term.
Can I just one thing? I agree with you that you put hope in the goodness of people. That might hold for the beginning, but I'm just wondering, 5 years down the road, VitaDAO is like everything went well and we found a blockbuster drug and money is on the table, right? Then you might more have like behaviors like that where people become greedy and jerky. And I'm like just wondering if there like more transparency would be, or if we could have like a register of like all the addresses that own the token, and say you have to declare who it belongs to, that like not one shareholder can have all of them. So having like another level of transparency that is usually uncommon in crypto community, I guess, because a lot of people want to be anonymous, but like just to balance this a little bit, just an idea that probably can.
I think that's a really interesting idea. I mean, to your first point, I would say that, you know, I don't know if like VitaDAO is going to solve like intrinsic human greed. So you're definitely right. Like all of these, the normal political dynamics, greed, all of these things, I'm sure will play a role in the nature of any large organization or community. And right. And so the only thing that you can do is put out a vision, a mission, and ethos, and try to build, like you're saying, some protections and some, let's say, incentives against that happening. I think the suggestion around identities being known is an interesting one and potentially a good one, but I'm from a purely, given my technical naivete, I'm not 100% sure on what the implications of implementing something like that are. I mean, obviously with the working groups and things like that, and obviously with researchers that join, there is this component of not wanting people to be anonymous in the context of this project, right? And I think from a legitimacy perspective and from a reputational perspective, a lack of anonymity in terms of the people who are actually participating in this DAO is pretty important. That said, crypto, and understandably so, and if people so desire privacy and anonymity, that of course is their right. I think this is something to maybe think about and consider. And I would say in the long term, there are going to probably be many problems like this that we have to solve. I'm not sure. I mean, Paul, I'm not sure if you have any thoughts there on what it would mean for all participants to be known. I think it's something we could probably encourage, but not necessarily enforce.
I ran into this exact issue with the grassroots volunteer aerospace company. And what happened was we discovered that whenever we used sort of karate to say, no, this is what we're going to do, this is our mission, and you had a lot of impassioned energy pushing for something related, but something that wasn't on the center track, it damaged us and would undo us. But instead, using Aikido, where if you've got some sort of impassioned drive, let's say it's even a drive to make lots of money, instead of saying, well, no, that's not our mission, you find a way to channel that in a parallel way that works symbiotically with what you're doing. Because whenever we would try to resist that and say, no, you know, this is not what we're doing, we would always lose. It would damage us. And finally, it was kind of the undoing of one phase of the project, is to just not listen to people, but rather I would recommend listening to people and saying, okay, I understand you're passionate about this, this is not what we're doing, but let's find a way to enlist your energy and passion so that can be mutually beneficial instead of becoming adversaries. And then that discourages having that counter force from sort of doing a hostile takeover, for example, if you say, no, we're gonna find a way to make us work together. And yeah. I know I'm hogging it with the questions, but I wanted to make one other recommendation, and that is that I would really encourage, just from past experience, that if you have folks that are impassioned, once you get done with this heads down first launch, is to find a way to some way to include people in the working groups, even if you say, okay, we don't really need that skill set right now, but I wouldn't underestimate the value of inclusion in terms of engaging someone that has the passion, you know, just somehow or another, just finding a way to do it. It really helps.
That is really well heard and yeah, really great feedback. I think we've already had a number of learnings just in terms of underestimating people and their abilities. I mean, we initially, again, we're a human organization. We're learning. I think we're making mistakes all the time and obviously trying to learn from those mistakes. But, you know, one thing that we saw early on where there's some people who just join basically like join the Discord, manage to get involved, manage to take us over some tasks and not by step or sort of like bypass the application process, but just intrinsically in a very DAO-like way became involved. And some of those same people, I think, also received rejection letters because at first glance, they maybe didn't have a background that was, you know, in any way associated with longevity or academia. It wasn't clear how they can necessarily help, but it wasn't a rejection letter. It was just basically, we don't have something for you to do right now. You know, we'll get back to you in a certain amount of time. But what we saw was, yeah, it's actually extremely, you have no idea what someone is capable of when they're driven by passion and a desire to make an impact. And I think it's something that we need to improve a lot as an organization is, you know, how we think there was early on some ideas that the working groups would be, you know, limited to maybe 20 members, just purely on the basis that having 60 or 100 people in a working group makes it, from a very practical perspective, very difficult to do certain things, difficult to have meetings, difficult to come to consensus. But I would really appreciate, you know, input from the community around how we can better organize this, how, you know, people that have experience in DAOs with larger working groups, you know, we would like to be as inclusive as and as transparent as possible and really allow everyone to get involved. And maybe just speaking to your, to the sort of other points that were raised, like, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of problems, obstacles, things to overcome, things that are very difficult. You know, I think I'm a huge fan of DAOs, but my background in my head comes from sort of startups, for example, where there's sort of a relatively clear role, clear structures. And this is something that has been really interesting to navigate. On one hand, I've been super blown away by how quickly people just come in and get involved, take over tasks, and you have this person that's like running with a high degree of autonomy. But also it's, you know, accountability is difficult. If anyone has ideas on or wants to give input from an operational perspective or, you know, how they think that we can become more efficient, especially once we get over the line with launch, I think we should, you know, have bi-weekly meetings, open calls, community calls, where we could really discuss ideas around how to become operationally more efficient all the time, and would value everyone's input there.
I definitely always underestimate the value of relentlessness. And, you know, it surprised me again, because that was my case, you know, where I got rejected, but then I was relentless. And resourcefulness, right? So if people are resourceful and have autonomy, then we can definitely get the working groups much bigger. And on the question of, I have some thoughts regarding the worries with some whales or oligarchy, something like that. You know, take it as an incentive, an encouragement to bring people in this, right? The more people, like the DAO is as strong as the community built in it, right? And how awesome would it be? Like, what's the best case scenario? Tens of thousands of people being all in, well, not all in, but all in on the longevity mission at least, and participating in the Discord and voting on the proposals, right? So we could get maybe 10,000 from the Reddit r/longevity, 10,000 from some biohacker or from the biohacker crowd, which is closely linked, I think, to longevity, right? And I don't know, stuff like that. Let's think big. And let's think decentralized, democratized.
I just had a random
thought. To that end, and I hope I'm come through clearly, was just curious, and maybe this was outlined in one of the papers, and I was not able to read it. When there's token holder votes being done, is it decided yet what mechanism that's going to be done through? Like, are you guys going to be using snapshot.org, or is there some other mechanism that you guys are planning on using? Just curious about the specifics of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So initially, VitaDAO is using a custom Moloch DAO framework that is essentially just does token-based voting in a very simple web app. I think as we begin implementing V2, we could definitely look at integrating Snapshot or things like, actually, Aragon just published a really interesting token-based voting system via Discord using Witnet. It's actually really amazing. There's new governance tools emerging in the DAO space almost like every 1 or 2 weeks. It can be challenging integrating that into like an ongoing live development process. And so kind of our goal is to really kind of ship V1 and prove that the high level model works. And yeah, as mentioned, that will be using a Moloch-like framework, which I think the DAO and Flamingo have both proven that they work very well. And then just a very simple form of on-chain voting.
I just wanted to chime in on on the same question of, you know, the DAO being as strong as its community and protecting against, you know, oligarchy. Something that I really liked when I was just checking out Gitcoin is they had a very cool like onboarding process, you know, where, you know, watch some videos, answer some quizzes, you know, and like, you know, and then it didn't actually result in getting tokens like I thought, but it made me realize that that could be a great way to really further decentralize the community if there's some onboarding where, you know, regular people who are just getting interested can do something and maybe get a few of the tokens, and then that could really help to decentralize things, you know. Yeah.
And based on maybe the fact that they posted before, they tweeted before, they contributed in ways, they've shown their support before today or something like that, right? So they don't just do it now for the tokens.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we reached over an hour of this community call. Thank you very much, everyone, for participating. As you said, DAO is as strong as its community. I think we have a pretty strong community here on this call. So I'm really hopeful. Thank you very much, and stay tuned for the next community call. We'll definitely publish all the information on our Twitter, but also our Discord and our Discourse. So if you are not there yet, please join, please subscribe, and thank you very much. Have a great day, everyone. And of course, it is recorded and it will be on our YouTube, so you can always rewatch. Ciao.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.